News Flashes by Richfield. And a good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From Hollywood's Radio City, we bring you the 10th edition of the 17th year of the Richfield Reporter, compiled from the entire worldwide facilities of the United Press. In keeping with the spirit of International Boys Week, we're pleased to have as our guest 17-year-old George Scaff of John Marshall High School, Los Angeles, who will read a portion of the news. George, what's going on in the world?
Thank you, Don Stanley. The Arab states had no better luck with the United Nations General Assembly tonight than with the steering committee 24 hours ago. Their proposal for immediate debate on the whole Palestine problem was rejected by a decisive vote, ending a campaign by the Arab states to force the UN into immediate and full discussion of Palestine independence. At the same time, Dr. Oswaldo Aranha, presiding over the General Assembly, spoke an assuring word. He said the Assembly will hold a full debate of all angles of the question when it comes to considering the British request for appointment of a committee to investigate Palestine and recommend action to the Assembly in September. Meanwhile, the United States reversed itself and started a move to give the Jews a chance to be heard at some stage of the Palestine discussions. Britain's delegation made no change in its opposition to such a move. May Day seems to have become a left-wing holiday. At any rate, millions of communists and socialists throughout the world observed it with parades, speeches, demonstrations, and manifestos. In Moscow, it was a six-hour parade of soldiers, sailors, tanks, trucks, tractors, and workers, with Premier Stalin in the reviewing stand, smiling but giving no speech. That was left to Marshal Budini, mustachioed hero of the Revolution, the Civil War, and World War II. The May Day issue of Pravda carried a sharp criticism of the United States. It came from the typewriter of Aya Ehrenberg and charged that fascism was being transferred to the USA and warned Americans they faced the same if they followed anti-Russian leaders. There was a huge parade in Paris and demonstrations in hundreds of other French cities and towns. All of Italy took the day off. Much of Rome was decorated with communist and socialist flags, but there were nearly as many white banners of the premier's conservative Christian Democrats. In Berlin, Hermann Schlimm, head of the city's unions, told a mass meeting of 250,000 that only a united workers' class and a strong united trade union can prevent a new war and solve the present misery of the German people. There was little violence except in the free city of Trieste, where the pro-Slovene and pro-Italian factions never did get along together. 15 pro-Slovenes were killed in last night's preview of today's parade. Today, at the same point in the line of march, another bomb was tossed into the midst of a pro-Slovene parade. 3 civilians and a mounted policeman were injured. Here at home, a Catholic organization known as the Christophers launched a move calling upon thousands of Catholics to pray for the Russian people and all those under Soviet domination. Some 300 prayer meetings were scheduled in cities throughout the United States and Canada. And now, back to your regular newscaster, John Wald, for news of the domestic scene.
President Alemán of Mexico concluded a big reconstruction loan for his country, then warned the United States in speaking before a giant session of Congress that this country must back its democracy against dictatorship with moral and material force. The 43-year-old good neighbor from below the Rio Grande said democracy, if not backed by force, whets the appetites of dictators. Shortly before he entered the jammed House of Representatives, where he was given a rousing ovation by the congressmen and senators, Alemán and President Truman issued a joint announcement putting their official endorsement on a multi-million dollar loan to Mexico. They said the new credit, intended to finance Mexican industrial and agricultural projects, will be granted through the U.S. Export-Import Bank. No details were given, but it was believed the loan would total about $50 million. Mr. Truman and Alemán also announced the two countries plan to sign a new agreement stabilizing the rate of exchange between their currencies, and that other plans for economic cooperation are being studied. Mr. Aleman's official visit ended tonight with a White House dinner at which President Truman awarded him the Legion of Merit degree of Chief Commander. On Capitol Hill, the House passed and sent to the Senate a bill that would continue federal rent controls at least until December 31st, but would give county, city, and town governments power to end controls whenever they decide a housing emergency no longer exists in their communities. The vote of approval, 204 to 182, came after the House executed an about-face and finally defeated by only 8 votes a motion to send the bill back to the House Banking and Currency Committee. Senator Scott Lucas of Illinois urged the Senate Finance Committee to scuttle the House-approved income tax cut measure and replace it with his plan to, as he put it, give the money back to the various income groups the same way we increased the tax load. Republicans didn't seem to be much interested in the Democratic senator's program. Eric Johnston appeared before the House Ways and Means Committee, which is considering the reciprocal trade program, with a firm opinion. The president of the Motion Picture Association declared, "This country's program for halting the world expansion of communism will fall flat on its face if the trade program is scuttled." Over at the White House, President Truman cleared the way for payment of benefits to veterans and aged persons which had been delayed because of lack of funds. He signed a deficiency appropriation bill that carries $2,835,000,000 in funds to take care of additional needs of various government agencies between now and June 30th. On the switchboard front, leaders of the striking telephone workers and the American Telephone and Telegraph Company resumed negotiations tonight amid union predictions that the company would make a wage offer that might settle the walkout. Henry Mayer, counsel for the long-distance operator, said it will have to be at least $6 or the offer won't get to first base. Early today, union leaders predicted a settlement of the 25-day-old strike before nightfall, but lost their optimism when a huddle with AT&T scheduled for 4 p.m. was delayed 5 hours. Hopes for early peace in parts of the West Coast phase of the telephone strike took an upswing when the National Federation of Telephone Workers Union said it was preparing a new compromise offer for submission to the Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company. In Winston-Salem, North Carolina, union pickets marched back and forth in front of all 73 gates of the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company plant when about 8,000 CIO tobacco workers went on strike for a wage increase of 15 cents an hour and greater union security. There was no violence as hundreds of the Negro strikers milled around the plant, marching and singing spirituals. In Milwaukee, Alice Chalmers announced a wage increase of 11.5 cents per hour, declaring it was in line with the national trend and would affect 27,000 workers in the company's 8 plants throughout the country. The AFL and CIO reported they were making progress tonight in their discussion of a merger, but word leaked out, presumably through the keyhole, that neither union had changed its longtime stand on the terms for reuniting. AFL's William Green and CIO's Philip Murray came out of a 5-hour huddle between the two peace committees to announce that enough progress had been made to warrant further talks tomorrow. Chairman Taft of the Senate Labor Committee chided the Senate for dawdling in debate on union control legislation and called for speedier action to bring the bill to a vote next week. Congress sent a bill to wipe out $6 billion worth of pending portal-to-portal suits to the White House, and its Republican sponsors dared President Truman to veto it. GOP chairman of the Senate and House Judiciary Committees gave out a joint statement in which they declared a veto might wreck the drive to cut prices and touch off major strikes. And they added, if the president is so improperly advised as to veto this measure, then he will in effect veto the American housewife whose family budget is shrinking daily under the impact of high living costs. He will veto the American worker who is entitled to good pay and good working conditions. It's up to you, Mr. President. Earl O. Shreve, newly elected president of the United States Chamber of Commerce, took issue tonight with President Truman's moral suasion campaign to cut prices. He said the people will not be fooled by attempts to make businessmen scapegoats and blame business alone for the wage price spiral. And he added, an ounce of production will weigh more in the price scales than a pound of words. Merchants of Newburyport, Massachusetts, where the 10% cut plan was born, voted unanimously tonight to continue their anti-inflation campaign indefinitely. In San Francisco, Standard Oil of California reduced gasoline prices 0.3 cents per gallon in 5 western states effective tomorrow in response to President Truman's appeal. This item from Cairo, Egypt, says thousands of blind, crippled, and ailing Christians, Muslims, and Jews broke through a police cordon today in efforts to touch the robe of a 20-year-old Armenian faith healer who leaves for the United States tomorrow. The name of the bearded young man is Avak, a one-time mechanic who began his faith healing in Iran after a dream in which he said he was exhorted to devote his life to worship and healing. He has been credited with cures in Iran, Iraq, and Palestine. According to reports, he accepts no money. Avak's method is to bless a sufferer, then instruct him to concentrate on the blessing and pray to God. In Cairo today, he gave little encouragement to the hysterical mob. He said he would attempt no faith cures until he returns from the United States, where he will try to cure a paralytic son of a millionaire wine merchant. in Palm Springs tonight, Krikor Arakalian, wealthy retired vintner, said he had read about the exploits of a miraculous Armenian faith healer, and after lengthy correspondence, decided to bring him here to attempt the cure of his son. He said stories in Armenian newspapers said the healer, known as Avak, cured cancers, opened the eyes of the blind, and cured paralyzed persons. So I hope he can help my son. His 37-year-old son, Vaughn, has suffered from epileptic seizures ever since the age of 14, 4 years after he was injured severely in an accident. He said doctors have been unable to help him. Culver City, California, Howard Hughes put on a convincing personal demonstration of a radar altitude indicator he designed to eliminate 90% of airline crashes. Flying a plane load of newsmen into a mountain range, he repeatedly waited until the indicator showed the danger point had been reached, then swung easily out of the way. Hughes said all planes of Transworld Airlines, in which he is majority stockholder, will be equipped with the device within 4 weeks. In the California capital, the first controversial labor bill to be placed before Governor Warren in either of his 2 terms was given final passage by the lower house of the legislature, a measure that would permanently outlaw hot cargoes and secondary boycotts in California. Santa Ana, William Grant Sherry and wife, actress Betty Davis, are the parents of a 7-pound girl, which has been named Barbara Davis Sherry. Los Angeles police arrested Mrs. Marion Billingsley, 44-year-old operator of an infant boarding home, charging her with neglect and unjustifiable punishment of a 20-month-old child. Grants Pass, Glenn Wooldridge, veteran operator of boat tours on the turbulent Rogue River in southern Oregon, says he will make an attempt May 8th to be the first man ever to negotiate the river upstream from Gold Beach, a distance of 120 miles. His boat will be equipped with a special outboard motor. Instead of the sponsor's message usually heard at this time, we're going to hear a message now from our second guest of the evening, 17-year-old Jerry Jordan of Southgate High School. It's very worthwhile. Jerry?
This is Boys Week. It's an eventful 7 days for the youth of the nation because it presents an opportunity to participate briefly in the careers that many of us have chosen as a life work. Boys Week gives us a chance to inspect at close range the complicated machinery of industry, of commerce, and government. We ask our adult friends plenty of questions, but best of all, we are actually doing the things we study in the classroom. Boys Week, however, has another and very important purpose. The big job of Boys Week is to create a closer bond between father and son. Most dads, and perhaps you're one, are pretty busy men. Sure, you know your boy's around when he wants a car for a date, or his allowance doesn't last, but that's not quite enough. No, not quite. Because we teenagers really need the counsel and the guiding hand of an older and wiser head. So here's a tip for you dads. If you have a boy around the house, get to know him a little better. Go fishing together. Take in a ball game or a boxing match. Be a real pal to your boy. And Boys Week will be a real success.
Now for other news flashes. A Friday bulletin from Paris says the 3-month-old coalition cabinet of Premier Ramadier has decided to place its future in the hands of the National Assembly. Washington Friday, top-level negotiations to settle a telephone strike broke up shortly after midnight, still deadlocked after more than 3 hours of futile bargaining. 4 passengers were killed and 47 injured near Huntington, Pennsylvania, when a load of heavy 1-inch steel plate shifted on a slow-moving freight and knifed through 5 cars of the Pennsylvania Railroad Streamliner American en route from New York to St. Louis. In baseball, the New York Giants kicked the St. Louis Cardinals in the face again 6-5 with Johnny Mize hitting a 2-run homer, his 8th of the season. Only one other game in the National, Brooklyn cashed in on 10 bases on balls to beat the Chicago Cubs 5-2. In the American League, only one game, and the St. Louis Browns took it from the Washington Senators 14-5, slaughtering 4 Washington pitchers for no less than 20 hits. In Pacific Coast League baseball, Portland 4, San Francisco nothing, a final score. Los Angeles is leading Seattle 5-4 going into the 9th. Sacramento 8, Oakland 3, and Hollywood 13, San Diego 1, both games in the 6th.
That's 30 for tonight, friends. Next edition of the Richfield Reporter at this same time tomorrow night. Remember, sometimes the younger generation wonders what the older generation is coming to. And don't forget, the new Richfield gasolines are years ahead. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.